Hello and welcome to Weird. I'm Katie, a science writer.
And I'm Amy, a nurse.
We're cousins and we have an unhealthy obsession with the bizarre side of science.
This is Weird, the podcast.
We're glad you're listening in today. This is Weird, the podcast, where we take a nosedive into the wacky parts of the world.
We each have an odd science topic we've researched, kind of. So we'll start by flipping a coin to see who goes first. And again, it's a digital coin.
Digital coin. One day, maybe on our like year anniversary of the podcast, we'll get a real coin.
Yeah, we'll get like a real quarter and we'll really flip it.
Let's get custom coin that like has our logo on it. I'm sure that's a thing you can buy online.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure it is. That's a great idea. We should totally get one for ourselves. Okay, I'll be heads.
Yes.
Usually heads. Okay. Oh, it's heads. Okay.
Cool.
Okay. So, just like upfront, full disclosure, you guys, like had a lot going on in my life, like basically moving, but I'm not moving, but I'm like renovating, like a lot of the rooms in my house, which basically means I have to like move all the stuff out of it and then renovate and then move all the stuff back in. So it's basically like moving.
Yes. It's so, all the steps of moving, but without a brand new place.
But without actually moving. So
carpet renovation.
Yeah.
It's no joke.
So I feel like I've done kind of a subpar job researching my topic this week, but you know, it's cool. We're just gonna kind of like jump right in. Go with it. So I first heard about this study from an Instagram account that I follow called Life Actuator. And he's this guy who like has all these videos about ADHD. And I mean, they're funny, but they're also like, wow, that's like totally true about ADHD. So he had talked about this study that was done on monkeys, where basically the monkeys were, they like deprived them of water and fluids to like make them really thirsty. And then they showed them pictures of, first of all, they showed them pictures of like celebrity monkeys or like other monkeys like in the colony who were considered to be like higher status monkeys.
Oh, okay.
And they showed them pictures of they're studying all the subjects were male monkeys, and they showed the male monkeys pictures of private parts of female monkeys. And then they showed them pictures of like regular status, like lower status male monkeys. And then they showed the pictures of like gray squares as like a control. And so what they found was that they would make these really thirsty monkeys. They would show them these various types of photos and also basically like reward them for looking at certain photos by giving them juice, which was the monkey's preferred beverage. And keep in mind, like they had been restricting the fluid intake of these monkeys, which is like kind of fucked up, but you know, it's for the experiment. So these really thirsty monkeys, they found that the monkeys, like even if they had like the juice in front of them, they were more interested in looking at like the celebrity monkeys and the female private parts than they were in drinking the juice.
Interesting.
So even though they're like dying of thirst, they're like, oh, that's like Brad Pitt monkey. Like, I'm gonna look at him. Like,
wow.
Basically, it was like monkey porn, and they're like, oh, it's like some monkey porn over there. Like, I'm gonna look at that. And
wow.
But that didn't happen for like the lower status monkeys. Like the researchers had to reward the monkeys with lots and lots of juice to get them to even like look at the lower status or like inferior monkeys photos for an extended period of time.
It's monkey social media, basically.
Yeah.
Wow.
But like with a, you know, like with a, like a kind of a tangible reward system and like just like gauging like how much they wanted to look at those photos.
Mm-hmm.
Because these very thirsty monkeys were willing to not drink juice and look at the photos of like the famous monkeys and the porn monkeys, even though they're really thirsty, they're like physically really thirsty. And basically like what the study was trying to prove was that monkeys have like a certain hierarchical social dominance. They use just like visual cues and looking at each other in like to determine like how to act.
Okay.
So the reason that like they look at these like famous monkeys and they would want to like look at the photos of those famous monkeys was because they were trying to basically gather information about this famous monkey, because that was going to then determine like how they acted in order to gain dominance like within their colony. They're looking at like, you know, the porn photos, the monkey porn because like maybe that's a, you know, like a viable female that's like willing to have sex with them, and then they can breed and, you know, extending their gene line. So that's you know, beneficial to look at something like that. So I thought that was super interesting, but like,
yeah,
wow, they literally would neglect this biological need to like drink fluids in order to look at these photos of other monkeys, basically.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So they were forego their physical need in order to be a greater part of the social hierarchy of their, what's a group of monkeys called?
I don't know. I think they just call it like a colony.
Is it a colony?
It's like a monkey colony. I don't know.
Wow. So, but it was only the male monkeys. They didn't do it on females.
Yeah, I as far as I read, they really only had like male monkeys in the study, because that would be interesting to see if the female monkeys acted differently than the male monkeys, because like maybe I don't know, maybe female monkeys be like, I don't care about you famous monkeys, like
or maybe you'd have to show them different types of photos of different important features of the social colony makeup that pertained more to them, for example.
Yeah.
Whoa. And did you say, was it a group of like captive monkeys, or was this in the wild?
I think it was a group of captive monkeys. Captive.
Okay. Yeah. If they had the ability to restrict water, so to do in a wild setting. Did it say what type
of monkey? They were
rhesus macaques.
They're rhesus macaques.
Rhesus macaques.
Thank you, Google.
Thank you, Google. Wow, that's fascinating. And I mean, I feel like there's a lot of implications and similarities to human society. Like, how often do we ignore our physical needs because we are so sucked into either a social setting that we find important, or just, yeah, like this was almost like monkey social media, and they were trying to be in tune with what's going on, whether that's looking at celebrities, whether that's, you know, looking at other things. Like, how often am I, you know, scrolling through YouTube shorts reels on my phone, and I'm like, wow, I really need to get up. Like, I'm thirsty, or I'm hungry, or I probably need to like move my body. But nope, I just, you know, keep scrolling on my phone. I think that happens to a lot of us. And that happened to the monkeys.
Yeah.
It happened to them. It can happen to us.
Yeah, totally. Like that was like the whole thing why like this guy Life Actuator like had it on his channel about ADHD, because he was basically like saying like, so this is an exact good example of like people who have ADHD and how like just looking at photos of famous people is going to trump like their need to go and eat food or go to work or get some water if they're thirsty, because just like the dopamine reward system in the brain, you know, there can be a lot of implications made about that, and that, you know, we get more brain reward from looking at porn and celebrities than we do from like drinking water.
And it must be at a very kind of primitive level of our brain. You know, I think we all think we're so evolved, you know, but when you look at monkeys, like, you know, we're not much better than monkeys, you know, and I think that shows a lot of promise. I mean, they should recreate the same study in people.
Yeah, I definitely, like, as I was reading this study, I was thinking about how like, I'll be scrolling through Facebook or whatever, and, like, you know, some article will, like, pop up on BuzzFeed about, oh my god, Kim Kardashian and, like, Kanye West, you'll never believe, like, what happened with them. And I'll be like, I don't care about that. Click.
I know. Literally. Like, I mean, what is it about? I mean, that's a whole other discussion, but I'm not a big celebrity follower type of person, but I do. And I literally could not care less about the Kardashians, but I still, when I see some like new Kim Kardashian scandal, who is she dating now? I'm like, who is she? And I'm like, in my head, I'm like, I do not care about this at all. Like, honestly, but I like, still click on it. I still
like,
do.
Like sometimes I'll like scroll past it and then I'll like a couple like scrolls down, I'll be like, but now I want to know, like, what's the new skincare routine that she has? Like,
I know. As if I can afford that.
Yeah. And then I'll like scroll back up and like read the article. And it's always like something like totally fucking stupid, right? It's always, you know, like, it's like, she uses moisturizer. And I'm like, oh, cool.
Thanks.
Yeah. And that's interesting that, I mean, I guess intuitively, I think we all know that monkeys are very social creatures and they have different like leaders, like kind of pack leaders and different roles within their little monkey society. But yeah, I guess I didn't even think of the fact that they sort of, it's not just like, this is the main male and this is like the main female and this is, you know, like the best hunter or whatever, like in the group. And, or maybe that is it. Like, I guess how did it say anything about like how they determined who, which monkey was a celebrity?
Yeah. Because that's what I was like, how did they determine like which monkeys were celebrities and which ones were not?
Yeah.
And so I guess they like grouped the monkeys together, this particular species. And maybe this is like common for a lot of monkeys, but in the Rhesus macaques. species of monkey, eye contact is a very like domineering action. So like the monkeys that were considered like higher status would look directly at the monkeys that they considered inferior, and the inferior monkeys would look away.
Okay.
Like they wouldn't look at like they wouldn't make eye contact with like the like dominant monkeys. And okay. So that's how they like determined in the study, like which of these monkeys are like the higher ups, like the famous monkeys, the right. like, celebrity monkeys.
Because they didn't have more like expensive clothes or
they didn't. Yeah. They didn't like live in mansions and like have the most expensive tree like house.
Live in the trees with the HOA.
They weren't like,
oh, that's really interesting.
Dating the most hot female monkey. Or maybe they were. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. I guess how does the dating world work in monkey world?
I don't know.
Yeah, that's really, and that's interesting that obviously like we're so close to monkeys, but like, you know, there's so many other animal species that would not recognize a photograph of another of their group because they don't recognize each other primarily like by scent, or they just don't even have the ability to recognize in that capacity. Like, you know, when we were talking about ants last episode, like they would not recognize a photo of the other ant. Well, they so maybe they couldn't at all. So not a great example, but you know, there's a lot of species that really don't have that ability. So it's like, you know, monkeys have that ability just like us to recognize other faces and to put value and meaning to those faces. And yeah, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
Monkey celebrities.
Yeah, when they were first like, and then we showed them pictures of monkey celebrities, and I was like, so like Curious George? I was like, wait, I'm trying to think of like famous
King
monkeys
Kong?
Now. Like Godzilla? Like, wait, no.
That one video game? Oh, yeah. What's that one video game with the big monkey?
Oh, Donkey Kong.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah. I was like, wait, there's, but then how did the monkeys know that those are celebrity monkeys? Because they don't read books and play video games. Like, and then I read further in the study and I was like, oh, okay, that's not what they meant.
And that's interesting that it's, they determined it through eye contact of that, that the more inferior monkeys would not have eye contact with the celebrity monkey. You would think that. Well, I guess that makes sense because it's a submission type thing. And I wonder if when the inferior monkeys were looking at the celebrity monkeys, or the celebrity monkeys were looking at the inferior monkeys during this experiment, I wonder if they also had other measurable eye contact differences, even looking at the photos.
Yeah.
Was it different? Like, did the, if the celebrity monkeys were looking at the more inferior monkeys, did they have a different type of response than vice versa, like during the experiment?
Yeah, because basically, like, within the hierarchy of monkeys, like, any monkey that, like, monkey A, like, if he considered monkey B to be, like, lower status than him, like he just wouldn't look at the photo. Mm. He would just be like, he would like glance at him and be like, oh, I don't care about that person. And then he would go back to drinking his juice.
Like, oh, okay. So the, when they looked away, that was means I don't care about you. So they looked more at the celebrity. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
I was thinking you meant it that the inferior monkey would divert eye contact as like a sign of submission. That's
how they like in person, like they determined, like when they met, they made the monkeys meet in person. That's how they determined who was in the hierarchy, like where everybody fell. But then later, like during the experiment, it was just like the monkey by itself looking at photos like on a computer or something.
Okay.
And the inferior monkey was like, oh, that's a celebrity monkey. Like, I'm going to look at that photo because maybe I can observe something from him that will like help me gain status within the colony.
And okay. Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. I feel like that's almost like kind of the craziest part is that the reaction is so different when they're looking at a photo, unless maybe I'm envisioning like monkeys looking directly, but maybe it was just like a photo as if they were like observing the monkey from across the room.
Yeah.
Versus not looking like, not as if they were making eye contact.
Yeah.
Because I think that would have been different.
I think kind of what they were implying is that like within a monkey colony in the wild, the more inferior monkeys observe the higher, like the higher up monkeys, like from afar. And in order to do that, they have to like look at them like out in the wild, you know, like not necessarily like in a one-to-one like interpersonal interaction where they're like sitting together and like hanging out, but just, you know, from like maybe like the inferior monkey is like sitting on this part of the tree and like there's like a more famous monkey on another part of the tree and like, you know, the inferior monkey is like, oh my God, look who's over there. Right. Like, he's so cool.
And then like trying to gain insight of like, oh well, that celebrity monkey did that today, so maybe I should do that tomorrow and maybe that will help me like get higher in the hierarchy or figure out a better way to either mate with more mates or get more food within the the colony or whatever. Okay, that's really interesting.
So yeah, so that's
thirsty kind of... monkeys, thirsty, like thirst thirsty crap. Monkeys like, there,
totally thirsty monkeys. Because it didn't seem to be like they're. Well, actually, I don't know. Maybe they covered this in part of the study that I didn't read because I was rushing through it. But because they had like the pornography photos, you know, and it sounded like most of the males looked at the pornography photos. They didn't differentiate between like, oh, is that like a higher up female monkey versus like a inferior female monkey? But I could be wrong about that. Maybe I just didn't read that part.
And I guess, would they, I don't know if they would be able to recognize these celebrity versus not celebrity monkeys just by looking at isolated parts of their body.
By looking
at maybe they can't.
Maybe they can't. I don't know.
It's a different type of society. you know what? I wonder what would happen if they included a monkey that was not in the colony, like a monkey from that they had never seen before in the lineup, and to see like how would they react to that, or like a made up, like create a celebrity. Just, I mean, that happens in our society all the time where it's like you see someone, you're like, oh, that person must be a celebrity, but really they're just hyped up by some sort of viral internet thing. And you know, like if they found like a celebrity monkey from another colony that looked a certain way, I don't know if the celebrity monkeys are more brightly colored or like maybe that's partly how they got to like their status, or maybe they're bigger, maybe they're stronger or something like that.
Yeah, that's a good question. Like, I do kind of wonder like what
more curvaceous.
Like, yeah, like what like what makes a celebrity monkey become a celebrity? Like, what do they look for in their celebrities? Like, are they like really good actors or like singers?
Are they just richer? Like, is it based on their appearance? Like the first episode where you talked about the barn swallows and they, if they had a certain color of feathers, they were seen as more attractive. Is it the same with monkeys where like they got to their high point in society because of their looks, or is it, because of their talents, their genetics, their, you know, the way that they act, or maybe they brought home the biggest meal one day, or, you know,
yeah,
maybe they have the loudest call, or, you know, something like that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure it's like, it's probably a combination of different things, things that monkeys do to impress other monkeys. I don't know.
Like, yeah. If you're a monkey that, you're a celebrity monkey, please call into the show.
Yeah, please call in and let us know.
We need to know.
What do you look for in a celebrity? Like, I mean, it would be, like, logically, I would think it would be monkeys who are, I don't know, stronger or better foragers. I don't know.
Yeah, or have had more children.
Yeah.
Or have passed on more of their genes or something. Or have fought off more, like, predators from the group or whatever, or maybe have found more suitable areas to live or and maybe it's the same as our society. It's, you know, maybe they don't actually know why they became a celebrity, you know, like maybe they're just like something happened in society and then there were some rumors and then like bada bing bada boom, you're a celebrity.
Yeah. I feel and like then all of a sudden, like,
just like the Kardashians, why are they so
all the monkey bitches like want them and they're like, whoa. So weird.
Now I'm a celebrity.
I'm really famous.
What kind of juice do they like? I guess I didn't know monkeys.
I think juice. it was like some kind of fruit juice.
Okay.
But I don't know. It said that it was like, that was like their preferred beverage.
Well, you know, good fact to know. If I'm ever around a thirsty monkey and I need to know what to serve them.
Yeah.
Juice.
Yeah.
Or just throw them pictures of celebrity monkeys and they'll be fine with that too.
Yeah, if you need them to stop looking at celebrity monkeys, you do have to provide more juice.
Right. Okay. Yes. Yeah. Noted.
Or like monkey porn, if you don't want them to be looking at monkey porn. Right. You're gonna have to bribe them with a lot of juice.
Right. It's a give and take.
Yeah.
Well, that is so interesting. Was there anything else that like stood out in the study?
That was kind of like the gist of it, I think. But yeah, I just like, I thought it was, it had so many like parallels to just like how humans act. Totally, like if I am walking down the street and like a famous person walks by, like I completely stop what I'm doing and like forget what I'm like, if I'm like going somewhere or like what, you know, like I just immediately like pull out my phone and I'm like I'm like, oh my God, I'm gonna totally text this video to Katie. Look at the person. They're famous.
Totally. Yeah, because we see famous people all the time.
Yeah, all the time.
Here in Colorado. Yeah. I know. Maybe one day we'll bring the podcast to LA and maybe we'll see lots of celebrities.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that is definitely the most interesting part though.
And then we can also bring ourselves some juice to LA and see if we're still interested in drinking juice or looking at celebrities.
Yeah, we probably have to lace it with something if we're in LA. Awesome. Well, that was fascinating. I feel like sometimes our topics like align very well and sometimes they're very different. And I feel like that's the fun.
I was totally going to talk about like concurrent heat exchange because like that kind of like went with your topic. But then I saw this video on Instagram and I was like, I'm going to talk about that instead.
Yeah. Thirsty like, monkeys definitely won topic battle.
Changed my topic last minute. Just because of
that. I love it. Thirsty monkeys. I'm going to have to look at that study. We should maybe do a whole another episode. Why don't we try to get the researcher on at some point or something?
Yeah. I love that they called the study monkey pay-per-view because it was literally like they were like paying juice to like look at these celebrities.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, look at porn. They're like sacrificing like their juice intake to like look at these like porn monkeys or like celebrity monkeys. And I was like, oh wow, that's really funny.
Honestly, I feel like scientists are like the funniest people alive. Totally. Funnier than the average people.
I mean, we're really funny, so
yeah. I mean, clearly we're like so funny. Like we're basically monkey celebrities.
We basically are monkey celebrities.
What do you think the monkeys would do if they saw us? What are they?
Throw their juice at us and tell us to shut the fuck up.
Yeah, probably. If someone had to throw juice at me, it may as well be a monkey.
Might as well be
only a celebrity.
Yeah, only celebrity monkeys.
Only celebrity monkeys.
Fuck off.
Right. So my topic is about the various types of animals that can freeze but be totally fine. As I think we all know, if you and I were to freeze solid, we would probably become unalived. So that's not probably.
Probably.
So it's typically not good in general to be frozen.
Very, very rare.
Not good for living things.
Yeah, it's very, very rare for a human to be frozen solid for an extended period of time and then come back to life.
Yes, yes. If you have, please call into the show.
Yeah. Yeah, if it's happened to you, please call in.
So, yeah, so, you know, so why? Why is freezing so bad? So, first of all, I guess, you know, mainly when we're frozen, we can't move, our cells can't go through, you know, osmosis and like liquid exchange, and our fluids can't travel around our body. But also the act of freezing, you know, expands our cells and then shrinks them if we then thaw. And then that's why things get mushy sometimes after you freeze them and then thaw them. And then of course, ice crystals a lot of time form as something is freezing and can obviously like disrupt other structures. So yeah, in general, not good. And these things are all risks to the animal world as well, but there's several different species all across the animal kingdom too, that have specific adaptations that allow them to become frozen, to fully freeze, sometimes frozen solid, and then when they thaw, they're still alive. So we can't do this, obviously. I wish we could. But the first one,
have you tried?
Yeah, that's true. Granted, I have not tried. I really should not speak about that unless I've actually tried it myself. But the first species I have on my list is the wood frog. So the wood frog, it can freeze up to 70% of its body, and actually maybe more. There's a couple different sources that had different amounts here, but it's everything can freeze. Its brain, its heart, its eyes, its heart stops beating because it's frozen. Its muscles stop contracting. It doesn't breathe. And then when spring rolls around, the frog's body thaws out and it just reverts back to normal and it hops away. And it does that every single year. It repeats over and over each winter. So how? How does this happen? Looks like there's a couple different processes that allow the frog to freeze and be totally fine. The first of which is that there's special proteins in this frog that suck most of the water out of the frog's cells. So it starts to dehydrate the cells. So less water in the cells, less water to freeze. And thus it just sort of goes into a state of, you know, being freeze-dried and, you know, doesn't destroy the cells from the act of freezing. And so that obviously like requires like a pretty major change in like their biochemistry. So again, there's these very specific proteins. It's like a micro RNA molecule that allows this to like reorganize the way its cells operate to suck that water out of the cells. So they have that going, but then at the same time, they also have very high glucose in their bodies. Their liver actually creates high levels of glucose, and that creates this thick like sugar syrup basically that runs through their body, and that changes the freezing temperature of their body as well. So sort of like antifreeze. Mm. And that helps them from it freezing all the way down to the cellular level. So it almost is like it's not fully frozen, I don't think, but I guess maybe that contradicts a little bit of the first statement.
They're just really, 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 really cold.
Yeah. They're like not like frozen 100% solid, but they're like nearly there, but not enough to actually destroy all of their cells. So they can freeze, and they do it over and over again, like every year. I'm not sure how long they live for, but just have your bodily fluids turn into goop and take all your water out of your system.
Just replace your blood with some syrup, some sugar syrup.
Yep.
And you'll be good.
Yep, step one. And there's several other different species that have similar evolutionary adaptations to this one that uses this concept of like creating its own natural antifreeze. So this frog is one of them. Another one is a type of caterpillar. It's called the Arctic woolly bear caterpillar. And these actually, you and I have definitely seen these. So they're up. Amy and I grew up in New England before we moved to Colorado. And so they live there, and they also live way up high in Canada, Greenland, way up into the Arctic Circle too.
They're really cute.
They're really cute. It's like brown, black, brown. They're really fluffy looking. They're actually pokey if you touch them. But it's like a brown stripe, big black stripe, and then another brown stripe. And they look like little bears. Like they're cute little caterpillars. They use a similar method to the wood frog. So they have very high sugar content in their blood. It also works like that antifreeze. So it protects the cells in those sub-zero temperatures that obviously can happen in New England, but definitely up in the Arctic Circle. And so, yeah, it just totally shifts the temperatures at which things freeze, and it allows them to kind of get all the way down to those sub-zero temperatures and just be totally fine and like basically freeze. And they also do this over, you know, the course of their lifetime as a caterpillar. But here's the crazy part. And actually, I had known about this and I didn't quite make the connection that it was this type of caterpillar. I'd heard about this fact before, but this caterpillar, it lives in caterpillar form, which is the larval stage of an insect, for 7-ish years as a caterpillar, every year freezing and thawing for 7 years. It's a caterpillar for 7 years. Usually, like, the insect lifespan does not bridge over multiple years like that. So it's 7 years, and then it finally pupates and then becomes a moth. So the Arctic woolly bear caterpillar turns into the Arctic woolly bear moth. And then, so once it turns into a moth, it is alive for 2 weeks, it breeds, and it dies. So it spends 7 years as a caterpillar. So maybe this needs to be a whole other episode, just to be an adult for 2 weeks and then bam, gone. So like, that's just another fascinating aside about this caterpillar, but crazy.
Oh, that's so interesting because like, and that kind of makes sense too, because I know when we lived in New England, like you see those little woolly bear caterpillars, like all over the place. Like there's so many of them.
Yeah.
But like, I never knew what they looked like when they grew up, like what they looked like in like moth form, because I feel like you don't see them as often. Like there's just not as many of them.
Yeah. And this definitely explains it. You know, it's only, I'm not sure exactly what time of year is their breeding season or if it's always the same or whatever, but like to spend that long as a caterpillar, as a larva, and then, yeah. And then you grow up and then you mate and you die. So, you know, that has, I guess, similarities to some of the other topics that we've talked about, where, you know, their whole purpose is to breed and then, okay, you're done.
Then you're done.
Yep.
That's interesting though, that it just spends like 7 years of its life just in like baby form.
Yeah.
It's basically like an infant for most of its life, just like tootling around.
Yeah. Isn't that nice?
Being fuzzy.
Like, I know. And then right when they're just really like finding their groove as a baby, and then, okay, oh my gosh, I'm an adult. And then they emerge as this beautiful moth. They're like, I've made it. I've trained for this for 7 years. And then they die.
And then they die.
You know, it was,
and they lose all their superpowers after they're in moth stage. Like,
yeah. And I don't think that they don't have this ability to freeze and be okay when they're an adult. And I suppose that makes perfect sense for this life cycle, because in order to, you know, grow that, like, things grow slower in colder climates anyway, or at least plants do. I mean, I assume animals do, but you know, they need to be able to adapt to the harsh winters every, you know, winter cycle. Then, you know, that breeding season happens and they know they're going to die anyway. Or maybe it happens right before the freeze and they die cold. I'm not sure. I need to look into that more. But yeah, so that's nuts. The caterpillars are crazy.
Weird.
it's so weird.
Really weird.
So the next one on my list is alligators. And now this one, the next couple I have here are not, or maybe not the next couple, but a few on my list, they don't actually freeze. Their bodies don't freeze. They just sort of go into sort of a state of being partially immobilized, their metabolism really slows down, and they, you know, do that to survive cold spurts during the winter. So what alligators do, and maybe I'm sure some people listening have maybe seen pictures of this before. I don't know if you've ever seen a picture of an alligator with just its little snout sticking out of the frozen water, and it's just a little snout, and everything, the ice is all frozen around them, and just their little sticking out. So that's what happens and again, a lot of alligators don't live in super cold areas. And so they don't need to do this for super long periods of time. But if they know that, you know, things are getting cold and the ice is starting to freeze, they will position themselves so they're only their little snout is sticking out, let the ice freeze around them, and they slow their metabolism since they are, you know, cold-blooded animals, and they're totally immobilized, but they are still breathing normally under the ice, you know, when ice freezes, typically it's just the first few inches of a lake or something, or, you know, body of water. And yeah, it's all liquid water underneath. It's cold, but obviously not fully frozen. So they're still breathing. Their heart is still functioning. And then when the ice melts, they just you know, shake it off and then they go about their day. But their little snout was just sticking out, and then the rest of them was underneath. So, yeah.
That's really
I'm not wondering what the first alligator that ever did that decided to do that. You know, like, oh, hey guys, like, it's getting a little cold.
I feel like freezing.
I
feel like that would be almost like by accident. Like, you'd just be like, oh man, it's getting so cold. I guess this is how I die. And then, like, several months later, like, you just wake up and you're like, hey, I'm still here.
I know.
I didn't die.
Or maybe he did it on a dare. You're like, hey, stick your nose.
Yeah, hey, stick your nose up.
Yeah, so alligators, really weird. So the next one on the list is painted turtles, which is also found all over the U.S. and Canada. And they have actually different ways of handling the cold winters when they're babies and when they're adults. So when they're little hatchlings, they have an adaptation to avoid freezing altogether by really reducing their metabolic rate. Which reduces their like energetic needs, and similar to those other animals, they their micro RNA helps like reorganize their metabolism. And so this process, it's called supercooling. So they can reach these freezing temperatures without any sort of crystallization of their bodies. So they can kind of remain in this super cool state. So when these little baby turtle hatchlings go into this super cool state, it doesn't actually happen for very long. So they can only stay in this this super cool state, which is, can be as low as 28 degrees Fahrenheit. So just below freezing. And they do that for maybe 3 days, maybe 5 days. Just sort of like this ability to become super cool during like cold spurts during the spring. Because when they hatch, it's typically the springtime. And, you know, as we know, spring weather can fluctuate a lot. So sometimes you'll get like a really cold few days, and otherwise it's warm. So they can go into the super cool state to make sure that they don't die as little babies. But as adults, some types of turtles, I believe it's the painted turtles and several others, they survive all winter under the frozen ice by slowing their metabolism. And this is probably another topic for a different episode, but they have adapted to slow their metabolism, live under the frozen layer of ice, and they breathe through their butts all winter. It's a different type of metabolism. And so they don't really breathe with their lungs anymore. They just absorb very low amounts of oxygen in the water through their butt. So anyway, that should be another topic. But so baby turtles can do this too. And the next one on my list is iguanas. And this is sort of similar to the alligator. It doesn't actually freeze. It can just adapt to short periods of cold temperatures. Because as we know, iguanas are definitely never found in super cold areas of the world. So to them, this adaptation, this only happens when it gets down to like maybe 40 degrees, so not actual freezing, but just much colder than average in say Florida. So what they do is they just go into this like lethargic state where they just become totally temporarily immobilized by this cold, and they totally stop moving. Every part of their body stops moving. They just look like a frozen iguana, and they fall out of trees all the time. So this happens in Florida all the time and other southern states where iguanas live, and they just like fall out, and people just see these like frozen iguanas falling out of trees.
I feel like I've seen videos of this on YouTube where like people are just like on a boat or whatever, and then they just like go under a tree and an iguana like falls on them, and they're like
poor iguana. Yeah. But and they really, and people usually think they're dead or something happened to them, but nope, it's just a little adaptation that you know, these little cold-blooded creatures do that usually live in tropical areas, where they just really slow down their metabolism and they just become immobilized just temporarily if it's, you know, cold for a few hours, say, so they can't stay like this for super long periods of time.
I feel like doesn't that make them like super vulnerable to predators and stuff like that? I mean,
you would think.
You're just like immobilized, you can't move, and like something comes up to eat you and you're like, damn it, I guess I can do nothing. So
I know, you'd think they would have like developed a different like type of defense, because maybe they'd be too chewy if they were like, you know, partially frozen.
Like, what if they're like in a tree and then they just like fall into some water and they drown because they're immobilized now? Like,
I know. I wonder how often that happens. Do they float? Does a frozen iguana float?
Yeah.
Should I Google that?
Like,
Are they? Yeah. Because I mean, since they're not actually frozen, they're cells wouldn't be expanded, just like, you know, when ice freezes, it expands and floats. Yeah. Poor iguanas.
Yeah.
And okay, so the next one on my list relates a little bit to what I did during my show and tell last episode with my little mealworms, because it's the darkling beetle, which is the adult form of a mealworm. But specifically, I think this is one specific type of darkling beetle that is the Alaskan darkling beetle. So it's probably not the same type that I have here in my house. But they can withstand temperatures as low as negative 76 degrees Fahrenheit.
What?
So that's pretty cold. That's like insane. And that does not kill them. So
that means you could like dip one of those beetles in like liquid nitrogen, which I think is like negative 70 or negative 80 degrees.
Okay, yeah.
Then they wouldn't die. What? They would just thaw out and then like
that's
scurrying around. That's crazy
cold. Like that's even colder than it is in like the Arctic and the Antarctic a lot of the time.
Dude, let's try it. Can we please try that? Because I have some liquid nitrogen at my office.
Oh yeah, should we test it with the darkling beetles that I have here, which is probably at the same time.
Yeah.
I know, that's crazy. But yeah, so negative 76 degrees. And the way that they do that is a similar structure or a similar process that I've talked about with some of these other animals. They make a sort of antifreeze that's sugar-based. It's called xylomenin. Yeah. And then they also have various different types of like oil compounds in their body. So that combined with that antifreeze structure prevents them from forming actual like ice crystals in their body, and they can just super cool down to negative 76 degrees Fahrenheit. So that's pretty nuts.
And wow. Then
and then speaking of different like insects on the, you know, we're on the insect front, a lot of bugs in the larval stage can do this like freeze thaw multiple times, like during the spring, because like as we've talked about, you know, spring fluctuates so much in their temperature that, you know, often they need to like freeze and thaw. So they have all these structures in place, the various different methods that I've talked about, and they're able to just withstand like freezing and thawing over and over again. I feel like your like leftovers wouldn't even be able to like withstand freezing like multiple times, like freezing thaw. Like it would just turn to mush. So that's nuts. And yeah, so they use things like this, like natural antifreeze, and then, you know, that other method that I mentioned where they will, you know, dehydrate their bodies, because like that's another big adaptation for avoiding damage during the cold, is the less water you have, you know, in your body, the less you can freeze.
Yeah.
And that's actually how I believe the little water bears, or the like tardigrades, those little tiny like indestructible invertebrates. I think that's one of the methods that they use to prevent from freezing. And that's how they can really, you know, survive a lot of different environments and different extreme temperatures and pressures and all that. So insects are pretty crazy.
Yeah.
And I sort of have a special mention, because I need to do more research on this one too, because I don't think this animal actually freezes, but it's just able to sort of super cool itself. And it's the only mammal on the list. So the Arctic ground squirrel, they don't actually fully freeze, but they do modify their body to be able to survive being in very sub-zero temperatures. And the way they do this, and I'm not sure exactly how they do this, this would require me to do some more research. But I guess for the background on this, for ice crystals to form, let's say, for example, snow, it needs like a nuclei for like an ice crystal to hold on to. So that's how, like, for example, like cloud seeding works. They will add more like nuclei, more tiny little harmless particles to the atmosphere during a time when it would snow already, and it creates more snow because there's more little particles for snow and ice to start for like crystals to form. So apparently the Arctic ground squirrel has been shown to eliminate all like potential nuclei that ice crystals could form around. I don't know if that's in their blood. I don't know if that's in their cells. This might also have to be another episode. So I feel like I've just opened up several cans of worms during this entire episode of like different things I have to research more.
Yeah, because
I'm not sure exactly how.
Like, that how works. Are they so weird?
Yeah, like I don't. Yeah, I need to find more information on that. But I mean, craziness. And then apparently, this type of concept could have implications for human medicine too, because the idea of being able to like super cool something without freezing it, that could, you know, eventually lead us to like the idea of suspended animation or like freezing your body and then like becoming alive many years later, mm-hmm. or like being able to transport human organs for longer distances or keep them, you know, like viable. Cause how long, like if they're doing a heart transplant or something, how long can that stay out?
Not a long time. Like,
yeah,
a lot of the times they'll get organs from people and like the people on the transplant list have to like be at the hospital within like a few hours. And like, and they don't, most of the times they don't know, you know, like they're not prepared, you know, like because someone gets in a car accident and like nobody could have predicted that. And then they're like calling, you know, this like transplant candidate being like, hi, can you be at the hospital literally right now?
Right. Yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah. So if they are able to like harness these types of, I almost said technologies, but evolutionary adaptations and turn them into medical technologies, imagine the windows that, you know, or doors, what's the metaphor? The doors that could be open. Yeah. If we were able to super cool human body parts without actually doing any damage and sort of put them in this state of suspended animation.
Yeah. I mean, that's really interesting. That's like, because I mean, there's already like certain types of procedures and stuff or like certain conditions where we actually want to super cool the body. Like there's certain, that's a form of like infection control and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Because when you like super cool someone, like obviously like the bacteria have less chance of growing.
Right. And yeah.
There's also, there's certain procedures that they do it. Like they intentionally cool down the body significantly and just in order to like operate on people. I don't know off the top of my head what procedures those are. I'd have to look it up, but I know that's like a form of part of the process of doing certain surgeries and stuff like that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I wonder if that happens with the animals too, where if they're in this super cooled state, maybe they are a little bit less prone to like having disease run through their body, because obviously if that happened to them during the winter time when they're not able to eat or whatever, you know, like that would be pretty detrimental to their health. And so maybe that's all part of like the evolutionary journey of of them, you know, adapting in these specific ways. But yeah, I thought that was interesting that it just, you know, it put, maybe one day would have like potential human implications. And then yeah, last little part here I had was about plants, and this was kind of just like random anecdotal things that I found online. So I'm not sure if these are based in real studies or not. But I was sort of thinking about, you know, freezing, like if you were to freeze a bag of lettuce in your freezer and then thaw it out, it really would, totally ruins most very watery vegetables if you freeze them and then thaw them. But then I keep thinking, like, you know, I'm a big gardener and I garden, I grow radishes every spring, and you plant those in the ground several weeks before the last frost. And very oftentimes it will snow a couple times after my radishes have burst out of the soil already, and the leaves are fine. So I'm like, how? How does that happen? So allegedly, some of them do have sort of antifreeze type of components, like higher sugar content in their leaves. You know, a lot of different types of plants maybe have higher sugars in them, especially leaves that you're meant to eat. And so like the different chemicals and like the concentration of the chemicals and cold tolerance of like different species are so different. So obviously this species that of plants that grow only in warm weather would not have this. And that does happen. Usually, you know, if it freezes, like when you plant tomatoes and you have the last freeze, you know, later in the fall, that's usually it for like the tomatoes and the peppers. But yeah, when I grow like lettuces or radishes or like snow peas, like usually those can withstand that.
And there's actually plants that like I know like spinach and stuff, like actually likes being colder. Like you can't actually grow it like in the middle of summer.
Yeah, exactly. And that's how like all the radishes and snow peas are too. Like it's a pretty limited range of like you plant them like 4 to even 6 weeks before like the last frost date. So usually I plant those in like late March, when we clearly have, you know, other snow and freezes after that. And yeah, and they thrive. And then really when kind of late June hits, like they all sort of perish. So they really, they need those cold temperatures. But some of the other interesting things I found was the stomata of the leaves of some of these plants. So stomata are like the little pores of that are on leaves. And that's what allows the plant to suck up water through evapotranspiration. So like when you're drinking out of a straw, you're sucking like water up, and that's sort of how plants suck up their water, is it evaporates out through the top of these little holes in the leaves. And so different cold and heat tolerant plants will have like different types of stomata that will like allow them to get colder, I guess. Hmm. And maybe the most interesting fact is they have different amounts of like lipids and fats in them. And apparently that's why, so cold climate plants have very little fat in them, because when fat gets cold, it gets hard. So like, right, when you put your vegetable oil in the fridge or something, it'll become solid.
Yeah, it congeals.
And so a lot of like tropical plants, for example, coconuts, which are like all fat, mm-hmm, they can live in those warm environments, but a coconut could never live in a cold environment because it would just like congeal. And so like warmer tolerant plants can have higher levels of fat. And then cold winter climate plants like cannot have any like fat in them.
Oh, interesting. Just, like, yeah, that totally makes sense, because their fat would just turn into like sludge.
Yeah. It's like when you make soup and then you put it in the fridge and there's just like a layer of
fat on the top. Yeah. And then you have to microwave it back in.
Or maybe I just put too much like buttery or olive oil and stuff in my soup. But
I definitely put a lot of butter in my soup. Yeah. That's good.
Yep. So I think that's basically my list of various, you know, creatures of all types that can survive in freezing temperatures and be fine, unlike us. So
yeah, I was gonna say, in your professional opinion, now that you have researched this topic, what do you think the likelihood of the guy from Frozen Dead Guy Days in Netherland, what do you think the likelihood of reanimating that guy is?
Yes, I do think about this often. So for our viewers that are not from Colorado, there's, legend has it, or I guess not even legend, like it's a real thing, real guy. Yeah.
It's a real guy.
Yeah, in this one of these small mountain towns here in Colorado. So, yeah, Google this. Google Frozen Dead Guy Days in Netherland, Colorado. So his family, I think, as I understand it, you know, mm-hmm, they wanted to try to preserve him, so they froze him. And this was many, many years ago now, but it has become this whole kind of cult following. There's a festival every spring where people go and they, like, celebrate the Frozen Dead Guy. Yeah. There's like bands that play, there's food trucks.
There's all sorts of like activities. They do like, they do like frozen wet t-shirt like contests. And they do like, they do like polar plunges in the lake, like in the frozen mm-hmm lake. And yeah, there's all sorts of like really weird Netherland activities that you can go.
Yeah. I've never been to, have you actually been?
I've never been. Honestly, it never really like interested me. I don't know. Just like being like, Katie and I both went to CU for a while, and I don't know, I feel like it's like a big joke in Boulder because Netherlands like right up the mountain. It's just like a thing that everyone jokes about. They're like, oh, Frozen Dead Guy Days. Oh, it's like,
yeah,
go up there and smoke some weed with the dead guy.
I feel like it's become this big, like crazy, like a bunch of college kids all like partying, which
that's pretty much what it is now.
So yeah. So I think we're too old for that now.
Yeah, too old for that now.
But yeah, I mean, I guess from a scientific perspective, apologies to the Frozen Dead Guy's family, but I think for him to have survived being frozen this long, they would have had to already, you know, pump him full of some of these different types of like biological antifreeze agents, or they would have had to freeze him in a very specific way, maybe using some of these super cooling techniques to avoid damage when he was actually frozen. So RIP to the frozen. To be fair,
I don't think you're offending any of his family, because I'm pretty sure they're all dead. I'm pretty sure he was frozen like back in the 70s or something.
How long ago was that?
Like a really long time ago.
Oh. Poor Frozen Dead Guy. Maybe for science, we'll have to go. You get to see the Frozen Dead. That's the only thing I would find interesting. I'm not into loud music.
I don't think you can see him. I think he's like, he is a real thing and he does still exist, but I think he's like in a storage, some kind of like storage thing.
Yeah. See, that would be the allure. Like, I want to see the frozen body. Like, I don't need all the, you know.
Also, now I'm like curious. I'm like, what's the legality of just, like, having a frozen dead body like in a storage unit in Netherlands somewhere?
Yeah, because like, if it was an actual legal thing, it would have had to be in some sort of like facility, like a medical or like scientific.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure this wasn't I'm pretty sure this wasn't like a they, you know, did
they
it
just
legally,
like froze him in a chest freezer,
like a chest freezer. Yeah, literally.
Yeah. Now I feel like I need to like look more into that.
Yeah, now I need to like look that up more because now I'm like,
yeah, like where is he?
Like, is someone gonna get arrested for having this guy that everyone knows is there?
I know. Or is he like maybe he's actually gone by now? Like maybe they already got rid of the body.
Yeah.
And you know they just keep up the illusion.
You just keep doing the festival, you know, for tradition.
Mm-hmm. Yep, for tradition's sake. Would he be considered a celebrity then? And would the monkeys... What if the monkeys saw pictures of frozen celebrities?
I do have to say that if I could go up to Frozen Dead Guy days and actually see the real frozen dead guy, I would definitely do that instead of drinking juice.
Right. Yes.
I would definitely pick that over drinking juice.
Except sure. I think all the juice that they serve at Frozen Dead Guy days is all alcoholic juice. Or, well... On the most PG version of it, I'm sure that they're doing all sorts of things.
Other types of juice yep. that you can mm-hmm. get there.
I'm sure they're consuming all sorts of things up there. Maybe some of them would turn into a special type of antifreeze in their body.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
I feel like maybe science is happening. So yeah. There we go.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us today on Weird, the podcast.
You can contact us on Instagram at weird.podcast.
You can subscribe to us on YouTube, Weird the Podcast.
Or shoot us an email at thepodcastweird@gmail.com.
Thanks, everyone. It's been weird.
Like M-A-C-Q-U-E. I don't know.
Okay. Reese. Oh gosh, how do you pronounce it?
I don't know.
It's a rhesus monkey. Yeah.
Rhesus macaques.
Oh. Yeah. Hi, dogs.
Sorry. Hi, dogs. Hi, Amy's dogs.
Sitting on the floor. So.
Oh, Titus! I can't wait to see them. For not very long, though. They only do this for like maybe several days.
Hang on.
Or a week. Oh, yeah, I know. I feel.
Pharmacy people are here.
Oh, okay.